countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, Countrywide with somewhat of a festive flavour, including music and carols from Lyric FM's Choirs for Christmas.
Candles in the window, shadows painting the ceiling, gazing at the far glow, feeling that gingerbread feeling. Precious moments.
To come. I think there's someone after arriving down the chimney on his way in the door as we speak.
The red suit.
The fur trim.
Ho, 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 and happy Christmas, Marie.
It can only be one man.
Ho, 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 happy Christmas.
Santa is arriving to Kilfinan, County Limerick for the annual Senior Citizens Party. In the kitchen, Ger Carey is part of a busy team of elves preparing dinner.
There's no leader. We're just a group of volunteers that have been doing it for a couple of years. 10 or 11 years, really, at this stage. Yeah.
We have here Brussels sprouts, carrots, and we've mash, roast potatoes here, and then our turkey and ham.
Out in the bustling dining room, Siobhan O'Sullivan and Nancy O'Mara are tucking into Christmas dinner.
Lovely food, lovely food. There'll be music and all on now after, so it'll be a great old crack here, like, you know. Great old diamond.
Because when we're sitting down, you get heavier and heavier. That's your losing it all.
How old are you, Nancy?
94.
94 years of age.
I don't feel my age at all. I think it's about 18 or 19. That's great, nice way to be in there. I always enjoy Christmas anyway. That singing and all that, you know. Not decorations so much. That's and singing. Yeah.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows if you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake.
Oh, you better watch out. Better not cross. You better not cross.
Just over the road in Scullhannan, first class and senior infants are counting down the days to Santa's arrival.
He has a big white beard and glasses.
He always wears red. The red hat that he wears, just kind of magic inside it that makes him go really fast.
God, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
Well, I think he might, shrink through the chimneys.
I think sometimes he comes in the door, I think, as well, because my nanny leaves out a key sometimes if she wants to do the fire lighting, and she leaves the key outside the door just so he'll know to come in that way.
At the senior citizens party, Santa has got gifts for the big boys and girls.
Ho, 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 happy Christmas.
Down the chimney.
I'll do my best. As long
good
as you best.
Chimney,
and how have they been behaving in Kilfinan this year, Santa?
Well, so far I've found that they're pretty good. They're pretty good.
To bring us presents.
And what present did you get?
The chocolates.
A couple of boxes of chocolates there now.
Yeah, that's all we want. To fatten up.
Happy Christmas.
Mixed in amongst the fun and laughter, there is also an acknowledgement of absent friends.
Eat, drink and be merry, but tomorrow we could be dead. Every year we come here, there'll always be someone missing. There's only one this year, God be good to her.
So you'd remember people
here? We would.
Yes,
yeah. We'd say like that they passed away and
yes.
Remember them, yeah.
So nine people one year.
There was nine, yeah.
At one side of the room, a grand Christmas tree lights up a dark corner. Kathleen O'Sullivan and Stacia Cleary sit side by side.
We're reminiscing away and laughing at nothing sometimes.
Exactly. We both lost our husbands.
And what does Christmas mean to you now? So,
I suppose family, really.
Family.
For me,
yes.
Anyway, yes. Yeah. Grandchildren. That would be the happy time. Sad times, too. It's time you miss your husband this year.
Just yeah. Christmas to come and go, you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Just true. Because it was Christmas Eve morning when he died. You know,
yeah. So sad. Yeah.
Then you've got to pick the pieces up and you have to come out and meet people and talk and whatever.
So this is the first time I really have enjoyed myself,
know.
You know, quite a while. So I had my husband sick for 7 years. I had a stroke. When somebody's sick like that, I'd say I just didn't come out.
For 6 months after
I didn't either, no. It's my first day out, actually.
And you're enjoying yourselves today anyway?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just stay weak, and she said we'd have another day.
As the party continues long into the evening,
our last word goes to the children of Scullhannan, who are almost ready to hang their stockings by the fire.
I'm looking forward to setting up the Christmas tree and putting up the lights.
Decorate and start making mince pies. And helping Mom and hanging the Christmas decorations.
And then when it's Christmas Eve, I will show lots of snow.
Santa Claus is coming to the town.
I would wish you all to have a really good Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Dolla Corna dear.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, the dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. I don't think Santa Claus will mind to you. He won't have to use my dirty chimney flue. Just bring him through the front door. Easy thing to do.
I can see me go
what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do.
No crocodiles, no rhinoceroses.
I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too. Surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do.
No crocodiles, no rhinoceroses.
I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too.
Catherine Fulvio is one of Ireland's best-known chefs. And this week, Suzanne Campbell went down to her home in Ballynockan Cookery School, Glenealy, County Wicklow, to walk the farm with Catherine, hearing about her turkey-plucking years, her vegetable garden, and a delicious Christmas dessert recipe for any pudding haters in the family.
My family have been here almost 100 years now. The Byrne family, they've been farming in this area like for centuries. So I've grown up in the family business on the farm. Mm-hmm. And as a child, I was milking the cows with Dad, pulling turnips. And I wouldn't say it was my favourite job, but my chief job seemed to be turkey plucker.
It's very sore in your fingers, people tell me.
It's really sore. And as a child, you wouldn't have the strength in your hands to do that. Mm. So then you get the job of, you know, pulling the final little details of the turkey. You know, those little feathers that get left behind. Yeah, that was my job.
And tell me then, this was the original house and this is now your cookery school.
Yes, so the farmhouse, it's an 1850s farmhouse and it was built for the Hetherington family. It's a lovely old farmhouse, very very typical Irish charming farmhouse. And then when my mum and dad got married and moved here, the dairy farm started to expand and they moved where they milked cows into an actual milking parlour. They built from the cowhouse to the milking parlour and all the machinery went in then.
You've your classic red, how do we describe that lovely Irish colour shed? That kind of three bay shed that everyone has.
I love that colour. I mean, that's just so Irish.
I know.
I mean, really. Somebody said to me, Wicklow is a red shed county.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it through. I love it. It warms up the countryside. To me, it's part of our picture of Wicklow. And the old hay barn, which is right in front of us, that fell down about 20 years ago. It had those old wooden posts in it. So I planted a herb garden there.
Wow, well, so, take me up there.
Yeah, so this is our Victorian style herb garden with the box hedging all around it.
It's gorgeous. And how long did it take you to get the box that high? For those of us who have ambitions of little parterre herb gardens.
That must be 10 years.
It was about 10 years, yeah. Now, what you have to watch for nowadays is there's
a blight.
A blight, you've got to watch for it and just dig it out. But I've got away lightly so far. But from above, it has that kind of Victorian look to it with the bay in the middle. And then I've got, I mean, look at us. We're just before Christmas. I've still got mint in the garden. I've grape bay. I've parsley growing. I've sage for the turkey ready for action. A bit of oregano there, thyme. And then in the summer over at the far side, I'll have my gooseberries.
Yes.
I wanted to go back to that old Irish ways. My black currants, blackberries. All of them growing, and a pair of pear trees, all of that. And then the far side, then we've our vegetable garden. So it's important for us that we try to produce as much as we can for the cookery school and for the people staying with us in the bed and breakfast.
It looks beautiful, it sounds beautiful, but for you, does it taste better as well that you're growing it yourself?
Oh, it always tastes so much better. Mm. And I mean, one of the things I notice when people come in here is they always say, oh my God, the smells, Catherine. I can smell the fresh herbs. I can smell everything that's, you know, edible. Mm-hmm. And that makes a big difference to us because already their first impression is healthy, natural food is coming your way. It's also great just to be able to pop out and pull what you need when you need it. We're blessed in that way.
Now, Christmas, it's a few days away. You're making something a little bit different for dessert, you're telling me, because this is not a pudding house.
Well, that's the thing. We grew up with the Christmas pudding, yeah, but we've kind of fallen out of favour. You know, I have teenagers. They don't do the pudding. So it's really just my dad who likes the pudding. So I've come up with this concept, and it's a cheesecake, but it's a Christmas pudding cheesecake. Now, don't be put off by it. I'm telling you, it's gorgeous. It's your typical biscuit base. It's your typical mm-hmm. cheesecake filling. But I crumble up a small Christmas pudding and I pan fry off with a bit of sugar and butter, some very finely diced pears and apples and a little bit of cinnamon and a bit of nutmeg, and mix that with the pudding and mix it all together in the cheesecake mix.
Oh, yummy.
And then it goes into the fridge and sets, so that when you slice your cheesecake, you get that little taste of the pudding coming through as well. And then I make a mulled wine sauce to go with it.
Is that a hit then?
It's a real hit, and you can actually do it this weekend, so you'll be perfect, okay, stress-free for Christmas Day.
Oh, look at this. Your veg garden is fab, and look at the view. These veg have an amazing view. They're looking at the late afternoon sunset now. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
So this valley here is Glenealy Valley, and it runs all the way down to the tail ends of the Wicklow Mountains. So looking straight down southwest from here, you're heading towards Tinnehealy, and at the other hill in front of us to the east is the Irish Sea. So we're in a beautiful location. And then to my direct west here is the first, like I always say, it's the first of the Wicklow Mountains. I could be incorrect in that, but it's Carrig Mountain. Mm-hmm. And when we climb that, you'll see Jowse, the hills around Glendalough. We're blessed in location.
You're in a beautiful situation.
Yeah, and then behind us here is the old milking parlour that we renovated into the cookery school. And that's our main life. People come, do the cookery classes, maybe stay over. We do all the hen parties, corporate team buildings, tourist groups. Everybody comes for a bit of fun. But most importantly, they come for the farm life. They want to see what grows here. And right in front of us here, we're looking at, look at the purple kale,
I know,
the green kale.
That looks
kale.
Gorgeous, that purple kale.
We've leeks there, we've art. See, the artichokes, they haven't died off yet. The garden is absolutely vital to us because it provides the food that we have for the business. But as well as that, it's showing people what we can grow and what grows so well in Ireland. Edible flowers, leeks, Jerusalem artichokes over there, cardoon, the Sicilian cardoon up there. It's phenomenal what we can grow here.
And in the middle of winter as well, the amount of varieties we can have and grow in Ireland, even in the off season, if you like, is huge, isn't it? And we tend to forget that and not utilise them.
We don't get the cold in the winter. We think we do, but we don't in comparison to Europe. I lived in Germany for a year. Oh my goodness, in southern Germany, I've never seen anything like the snow and the cold. Whereas here, it's still mildish, so things can still grow and actually thrive. And that, coupled with the little polytunnel that we put in a couple of years ago, that helps us because we can bring things on in the polytunnel and plant them out. And even this time of the year, I mean, look at the salads. There's lovely radicchio and everything growing here. Yeah. And they're going to be so hearty. They'll be perfect for Christmas Day.
Thank you.
for Tipperary man Tim Cullinan, a pig farmer from near Tumivara, Christmas came early this week when he was elected as the 16th president of the Irish Farmers Association, the fourth Tipperary man to hold that position.
So I declare Tim Cullinan elected president.
So what was the mood like among farmers he canvassed during the election campaign?
The mood among farmers was very clear. Like, I've travelled every county in the country and farmers want change. They don't want division in our association. Like, I've said from the start of my campaign, you know, division is wrong and I will do everything in my power in my time as president of IFA to reunite farmers in IFA. We have to have one voice. If we want to deliver for farmers, it's with one voice we will deliver, and deliver both on prices and on cap, environmental issues. Whatever the issues, it's about being united and one voice delivering on behalf of farmers.
You said that you want to earn the respect of the general public. What do you mean by that?
I think farming has taken a hammering. I've said it from the start of my campaign. Farmers have been walked on, they've been trampled on. It's time for farmers to stand up, and I will get the respect back for farmers that they deserve. I think the public understand that farmers are the food producers. We're the guardian of the country. I think people need to realise what farmers do. They produce food, but they're also guardians of the countryside, and I firmly believe we will get the respect back of people right around the country.
There is a criticism, and there has been criticism, particularly during this campaign. You weren't taking the environment seriously and the issues in relation to climate. Is that the case?
We as farmers have always taken the environment seriously, and I have always taken the environment seriously. And I think we have to remember, the government needs to wake up here. Chagas needs to wake up. There needs to be more research done, because clearly our grassland is an excellent carbon sink. Our hedgerows are an excellent carbon sink. That has to be taken account of, and that's what I am going to fight for going forward.
Finally, Tim, what about the IFA as an organisation? Unifying farmers, how important is that going to be now for you?
It's absolutely crucial that we do unify farmers. I believe that with the right people around, that we will get IFA back to its rightful place, where it's the strongest farm representative body in Ireland, but also in Europe. And there's a job of work to be done. I said I will bring change. Like, IFA is around a long time. Like all businesses, you need to have change, and I will implement change, and that was in my manifesto, and I will deliver that over the next number of years.
All right, thanks very much, Tim. Happy Christmas.
Thank you, Damien.
Katrina Morrissey, your news editor with the Farmers Journal. Tim Cullinan has just been elected as the next president of the IFA. What sort of task faces him now?
I think a huge task, because a feature of this year has been the kind of fragmentation and the division among farmers and between farm organisations as well. He referenced beef prices in his speech there, and I think that is, we have, I suppose, a beef task force meeting coming up on the 9th of January. That'll be one of the first things on his agenda. He has campaigned on a ticket of changing the organisation. He hasn't outlined what that is yet. I think he would have promised a lot to his electorate as he was on the campaign. It'll be interesting to see how he delivers. But I think the division among and between farmers is probably the biggest challenge for him at the minute. In addition to the usual farmer problems of income, you know, this huge, huge distrust now between factories and farmers at the minute.
What about, I suppose, the image of farming in the general public and issues relating, obviously, to the climate, which farmers are obviously going to have to play a huge role in? Is that going to be something that he's going to have to obviously be cognizant of as well, that not only leading and representing his own organisation, but also dealing head on with these big challenges?
I think farmers are really, really sick of the farmer bashing. They're being seen as the bad guy in an awful lot of the environmental debate. It'll take the farming leader to be on the front foot to really address that. And I think that's what farmers want. They don't want to be hearing about how bad they are for the environment, how bad they are for water quality. They want someone who can come out and say, actually, hang on, that doesn't really tally with the figures that we have here. So I think if he can go on the front foot on the environmental challenge and really highlight what farmers are doing, I think that will be definitely a positive for both him and the organisation.
I'm here with Imelda Walsh, who is county chair in Tipperary, and you're also spearheaded Tim's campaign over the last God knows how long. I'm just wondering, you know, how many people are involved in a campaign like this?
We probably had 200 people involved in this campaign between everybody, whether it was a branch level, whether it was a county level working in the counties, or whether it was inside in the office. It's been absolutely phenomenal, the amount of people that worked in this campaign, the goodwill. And I think, Damien, it's a testament to me when people pick up the phone and they ring me and say, I'm free tomorrow, where would you like me to go? We're willing to go anywhere that they were asked, anything that was asked of them, because they had such faith in Tim. Because Tim's reputation in North Tipperary is second to none for standing up for farmers, listening to the voice of farmers on the ground, which is hugely important. Farmers are crying out to be heard. Never have farmers felt so alone and so isolated as they feel now with all the things that are coming at us, whether it's climate change, whether it's environment, whatever the issues may be. The beef price, I suppose, has to be up there as the number one, but across all the sectors and everything else. And I am hugely confident that Tim is the man that will represent all farmers and represent all farmers and all commodities well, and stand up for farmers. As a farmer, that's what I want. Somebody that's going to stand up for me and fight for me.
Well, it's a nice Christmas present for you to get.
Oh my God, it's the best Christmas, it's the best feeling in the world. It actually surpasses Tim beating Kilkenny in the All Ireland. This is the most wonderful feeling in the world. Thanks, Damien, and a very happy Christmas to you and all your listeners. Thank you very much.
Well, it's winter solstice time, which of course marks the shortest day of the year, which mankind has been celebrating for thousands of years, most famously in the 5,500-year-old Newgrange Passage tomb, which will be a hive of activity again this weekend for visitors from all over the world keen to witness firsthand the amazing structures that channel the first rays of the rising sun into the heart of a massive burial chamber in the heart of the Boyne Valley. But Newgrange is just one of hundreds of ancient megalithic structures that litter this UNESCO World Heritage Site, and more are being discovered all of the time. Dara McCullough visited one local landowner, Owen Brennan, who also owns Devonish Nutrition, but he has not one, nor two, but five passage tombs on his farm at Douth, with the most recent one discovered right outside his back door.
It was a wet and very windy day when I visited Owen Brennan, a successful businessman who recently bought Douth Hall. Even before he started into the restoration of the house, both he and resident archaeologist Cliona Nuinon knew that they wouldn't be digging for long before they hit some of the valley's enormous store of prehistoric treasure.
It is definitely a hotspot, as the valley is in general. We kind of had a suspicion that the house might have been built on a passage tomb even before we started excavating, because a piece of megalithic art that probably either formed part of a curbstone or a chamberstone was found just to the east of the house, so we knew that a passage tomb wasn't too far away. And we already had two recorded monuments that had been known about for well over 100 years on the back lawn of the house, two smaller passage tombs, so the clues were there.
This is like Silicon Valley of monumental megalithic tombs, isn't it?
No, it's always been a special landscape. I think part of it is the quality of the land, but it's also the river. You have the River Boyne comes along the south edge of Bruna Bonia, and then to the north there's a tributary called the Mattock. So it's nearly like it's creating a little island between these two bodies of water. And this became a focus from the middle Neolithic period on, so around 5,500 years ago, for these great monument building projects. And it looks like it was drawing people in, possibly from wider areas, to come in here and construct the monuments.
I mean, the size of the monuments here is worth considering. I mean, somebody told me that there's millions of tons of earth were moved by all these ancient tribes, I suppose they were, when they were building these.
Yeah, in terms of sort of the length of time people were building, so you've got quite a long tradition of building here of well over 1,000 years. So they had time to shift that kind of soil.
But still, we're talking about 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago. I mean, were wheels, sorry for the stupid question, was there wheels invented back then?
No wheels, all people power, and a lot of the material used in the passage tombs, they're not local. So grey wacky, it's a type of sandstone that the passage tomb builders really loved for their chamber stones and the curb stones. And we think it comes from Claverhead up in Louth, which is around 30 kilometres away. There's a lovely quarry site there just on the coastline. So it was probably brought by sea, then up the river, and then for this monument in particular, it would have been a nice drag up from the river. We're probably...
A horrible drag.
It's a 40-metre difference in altitude and around 800-metre distance, so...
And the curbstones we're talking about, some of the biggest rocks that they were dragging up there, a couple of tons in weight?
Oh, at least some of our bigger ones are probably 9 or 10 tons.
I mean, I see them around us here. You have them all wrapped up in plastic and insulated against the weather, I guess.
Yeah. They're better protected than us at the moment, so...
Listen, fascinating and all as this talk is, I think maybe we should decamp inside before we get blown away altogether. Okay, come on. We'll go into the house, on, will we?
Perfect.
We've just stepped into Douth Hall. We can look out the back windows of the house here, and we're effectively looking down into the passage tombs or the megalithic graves that we were, the structures we were just standing huddled in a few minutes ago. Owen, I mean, at any point during this whole excavation phase, did you go, mother of God, what am I after getting myself into here? Because a lot of landowners are maybe fearful of engaging with the archaeological treasures on their land because they're worried of the restrictions that might follow because of that. But at the same time, they've massive respect, and it's something that seems to have been passed down through the generations.
And passed down for much longer than we generally consider, which is why Cliona's been mentioning, I've been mentioning, time periods like 6,000 and 7,000 years, and perhaps for longer, for all we know. So those are immense periods of time for people to protect, preserve, defend. So one of the things that is striking about this landscape is to ask ourselves the question, what is it that we will do in our generation that people will be looking at in 7,000 years? There's a lovely saying about this that if we want to learn something new, a good place is to start by reading an old book. And in a way, you can think of Douth as an old book. And I would say we've all learned a great deal, which is relevant not just to the 21st century, but relevant for, we think, many centuries to come.
Cliona, I mean, the significance of the tombs here, I mean, in a national sense or in an international sense, how significant are they?
Well, in terms of Brúna Bonnia itself, the finding of such a large monument that had been unknown about for obviously hundreds and hundreds of years was really significant.
And literally comes up to the back wall of the house. I mean, maybe the house is actually sitting on part of these structures, is it?
It's doing more than sitting on it. When the 18th century builders came along, it looks like they dug a big hole in the middle of what was left of the mound and reused a lot of the stone that formed that mound to build part of their basement.
Okay.
So I'd always say, because I used to work in Galicia, and Galicia has a lot of smaller passage tombs as well, but a lot of them have been robbed out, so you'll have quarry scoops in the top of them. Whereas you contrast that to Ireland, where we have all our pishogues and our superstitions that these were the houses of the dead, the fairies, and a lot of them were protected that way. So I think farmers, they get a lot of stick about a lot of different things, but at the end of the day, they're the guardians of the land in Ireland, because most of our land is farmland, and they've been responsible for the survival of these monuments.
Well, that's nearly all we have from this festive sprinkled countrywide this morning, which has featured entries in this year's RTE Lyric FM Choirs for Christmas competition, now in its 20th year, and it's the largest choral competition in the country. Now, Evelyn Grant will have more entries on her radio show on Lyric FM on Monday at 1 p.m. Do tune in for that. On today's programme, we heard from St. Joseph's Primary School Choir from Tipperary Town, the Millicent Singers from Clane in County Kildare, the Cork School of Music Children's Choir, the Wicklow Choral Society, the Dublin Youth Junior Choir, and the Ramparts Chamber Choir from Dublin as well. Now, we also had reports on today's show from the IFA presidential election earlier this week, from Suzanne Campbell in County Wicklow, and from Dara McCullough in Newgrange in County Meath. And at the beginning of the programme, we also heard from young and old in Kilfinan in County Limerick, including the children in senior infants and first class at Scoil Chionán, which is also home to the Grey Heron Media Trio of Dermot McIntyre, Daniel Clancy and Mary MacDonald, whom you heard enjoying themselves with Santi and their neighbours earlier this week. Well, today's programme was produced by Eileen Heron. Coming up after the 9 news here on Radio 1, playback with Sinead Mooney. On behalf of the Countrywide team, I'd like to wish you a very happy and peaceful Christmas, and we'll be back again at the same time next week. So, until then, bye-bye, and thanks for listening.